everybody. Even though some folks are still grabbing their lunch, we might have a few folks come in and join us a few minutes late. I'm Andrew Brueger. I'm the Executive Director of the Wasatch Front Regional Council, and I have the great honor and privilege of rotating into the chairmanship of JPAC this year. We have rotated the responsibilities for organizing JPAC among WFRC, MAG, UDOT, and UTA, and this is our year, so we're very happy to be able to host this. Let's start out with going around with introductions, and if you could say your name and the organization you're representing, and if it's not obvious what part of the state you're from, that would be great, and then we'll go ahead and jump into our meeting. So, Mayor, can you start with you?
Sure. I'm Kevin Watts, I'm the mayor of Cameron City, and I was appointed by the Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Mayor Timothy, I'm mayor of Bluffdale, from WFRC.
Bill Summer from Salt Lake.
Andrew Jackson with Mountain Land Association of Governments.
Jerry Benson with Utah Transit Authority.
Myron Blaine with the TCM Field in Washington.
Megan Holbrook, Transportation Commission, Region 2, Salt Lake Center.
Nathan Lee, UDOT.
Andrea Pearson, WFRC staff.
Carl Spaceras with UDOT.
Ted Johnson, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Katie Reese, I'm the mayor of Cedar Hills, and I was appointed through Mountain Association of Governments.
Shane Marshall, UDOT.
Ivan Marrero, Federal Highway District.
Jeff Scott, Fox Center County Commission, through WFRC.
Salt Lake City Mayor Jack Biskupski.
Jeff Gilbert with the Cache and PO and Logan.
Craig Butters, Cache County Executive with Cache and PO.
John Barber with Morton County Council.
Laura,
work our way around that.
Laura as well.
Tina.
That's the one UTA.
And special announcement, Utah, the year. Mother of the Year, officially, seriously.
Yes.
I'm Tina Cannon, Morgan County Council.
You gotta get like at least a sentence or two on Mother of the Year, seriously.
Yeah. So, figure your mother in short. That's my advice. And I'll try to be saying.
I mean, you were officially named Utah Mother of the Year and recognized on the floor of the Senate today for that honor. So, congratulations.
Thank you. Okay. It's humbling because there are a lot of really incredible mothers in the state that I am honored to represent.
That's awesome.
All of them.
So Councilmember Cannon agreed that she's going to be taking our children if we want her to watch them.
For a prize. Shane and I have already named it. I think it's about 56 million for girls at age 13.
All right,
there you go. All right, keep going. CJ,
go on to the PTA. Bob Allen with Mountain Mountain Association of Governments.
Julia Rawls from Mercy Commission. Linda Hall, you got it.
Caroline Rodriguez, Smith County. Carl Lord, Cache
County, Council. C. Paul, Federal Highway Administration.
Federal Highway Administration.
Do you
have
a question? I'm the National Transit Issue
CEO.
Jordy Valerie, Regional Council staff. Kurt Kramer, Wasatch Front staff.
Cameron Morrison, UDOT.
Brett Melbourne, Davis County.
Do we miss anybody?
Huh? Sean Cedar with Brown.
Okay. Well, wow, look at all these people from all over the state coming together in the Utah way of collaborating. That's what JPAC is all about. JPAC is the Joint Policy Advisory Committee, and I know that some of you have not been involved in JPAC before. So what we're going to do is start out, you have this on your agenda here, by talking a little bit about what is JPAC, what's its purpose, what's its structure, and what's our planned schedule for the year. But first, I saw Andrea looking at me. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from our September 7th meeting, please?
So moved.
Second?
All second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Unanimous approval of the minutes. Thank you. All right. What you have in your packet in front of you and what was distributed to you in preparation for this email are the organizing documents for JPAC, the Joint Policy Advisory Committee. JPAC was first formed in 2002, and there's a sort of an extended story behind its formation that Andrew has told us in the past. But basically, it arose out of a desire from state policymakers to have coordination across the borders that are represented by our various jurisdictions, principally in the transportation space. So if you get to just one particular example, probably the most noteworthy one in the formation of JPAC, if you get to the border between Salt Lake County and Utah County, shouldn't we be coordinating that? Because we have people flowing back and forth there. It was true in 2002. It's even more true now.
Yeah, it's actually the EIS for I-15 Front Runner that we launched, and we were running those projects. And it was that was where the need was at.
Great. Thank you, Carlos. So coordination of our planning activities, coordination of our funding assumptions, etc. And that led to the creation of this this body that cuts across the transportation planning agencies in the state. So this memorandum of agreement in 2002, if you look at the bottom of the page, it says purpose. At that time, MAG, WFRC, UDOT, UTA, conducting a joint transportation planning process on the Wasatch Front. And if you turn to the second page, committee structure, it talks about forming JPAC. That's item one. And then the third item, a joint technical advisory committee made up of representatives of staff from all of those agencies. So actually, just immediately before this meeting, the technical staff from all of our agencies met and worked over and talked about things that some of you would be bored to have a conversation about, so we're not going to do that with you again today. So there's a policy level and there's a technical level, and we always engage at both of those levels. And then if you look down for the scope, this goes through ABC and talks about UDOT and UTA, et cetera. But if you look at those numbered items, common evaluation criteria for rating and ranking projects, common list of prioritized projects, financing strategies. And again, the idea is that we should be coordinating on these topics across our agencies and across our jurisdictions, because it will be the most effective and efficient way for us to plan for the future, identify and utilize resources to get the maximum return on our investment. And when I say on our investment, that is the investment of taxpayer dollars, generally. We are public agencies investing funds raised through taxes, and so we want to make sure that we're being as coordinated and efficient with the use of those public resources as is possible. So that was originally in 2002. In 2004, there was a slight modification, updating the membership, and that's that Amendment 1 in your packet. And then in 2007, there was again another update to the agreement for JPAC, which added in the Dixie MPO and the Cache MPO, with the idea that all of the transportation agencies in the state should be involved in this process, not just those on the Wasatch Front. And again, it says on that page, Memorandum of Agreement for Joint Policy Advisory Committee, under function, well, list out the membership, and then under function, and I think this is an important point, JPAC functions as an advisory body to its member agencies. What that means is that JPAC is not intended to supplant the decision-making authority of any of the individual entities. Rather, it is a venue through which we can coordinate and then take back to our respective entities and be informed by and make the best decisions in a broader Utah context, not just our individual areas or jurisdictions. And then an updated statement of the goals, coordinating our planning and programming, synchronizing You gotta love this. Encourage seamless transportation systems by synchronizing long-range plans and coordinating short-range programs of projects across planning boundaries, financing strategies, and then recommending actions to our agencies as appropriate. And part of the way I think about this is seamlessness and coordination. Most normal people out there, when I talk to them, and if they ask me, where do you work? And I say, I work at Wasatch Front Regional Council. I kind of get a blank stare. I say, it's a metropolitan planning organization. And then the blank stare continues, and they go, oh, yeah, yeah. Now, this is not true for UDOT and UTA, of course, your household names. But my point here in terms of planning and coordinating the technical details, the average person out there just going to and from work or school or shopping or going out for recreation or whatever, they're not thinking about who the agencies are or where the borders are, even from city to county, and particularly for transportation and land use planning agencies. But I think that they should be able to rely on us to be coordinating across boundaries to make sure that the whole system functions seamlessly as possible across jurisdictional boundaries and across modes of transportation. And of course, the sort of prime example of that coordinated effort is, say it with me, Utah's Unified Transportation Plan. Thank you. Now, who's going to hold it up and get brownie points? Anybody? There you go. Seeker. Way to go, Seeker. So we're going to be talking about that later, but this is just an example of the kinds of things that emerge from JPAC that we coordinate across the whole state for the benefit of all of the residents of the state of Utah. Okay. That's purpose and structure. Before I go into the schedule for this year, any questions, corrections, additions to what I said about what JPAC is and purpose and structure?
Maybe if I could give a little additional background, yeah. Carlos, feel free to jump in as well. But so each MPO is required to update their long-range plan every 4 years. And I'm not sure on the smaller MPOs if you have a 4 or 5 year cycle. So they have a 5 year cycle, and we have a 4 year cycle. What happened previously to JPAC is that, depending on how you look at it, WFRC would adopt their plan, and then 2 years later, Mountainland would adopt their plan. And so we were off on different time frames. And so, depending upon who got their plan in place at which time, they could assume the full revenues of the state for their plan. So one MPO could adopt a plan, assume all the revenues that the state will have for the next 4 year period, and then when the next MPO came in and adopted their plan 2 years later, they couldn't make those same assumptions to be financially constrained because the previous 2 years, all of those revenues have been already accounted for in another MPO's plan. Another issue that we had is that the cost of the different projects in the plan. And so you had one MPO or one entity that would identify the cost in today's dollars uninflated. The other MPO would identify in year of expenditure, and so you may have the same interchange, and in one plan it costs $65 million, and another plan it costs $120 million, and it's the exact same plan in the exact time frame. It's just how you make those assumptions on those dollar amounts. Is it today's dollars inflated, or is it in year of expenditure inflated numbers? And so that was hard for the legislature to understand, and they'd say, well, we're going to do this interchange that's half the price of this other one when they're actually the same price in the same year. It's just how it was presented. And so the legislature said, we want you to be on the same time frame, and we also want to have the same assumptions on how much something costs, because there was no guideline as to what those would cost. Additionally, you'll see in there that there used to be he's got federal earmarks on a regular basis. And it was a game where you would go get a 1% earmark on a project, and that earmark would expire within a certain amount of time. And so that would leverage on you to fund a project that they may not have wanted to fund because they didn't want that earmark to go away. That was 1% or 2% of the project. So that was another thing that the guy said, don't do that anymore. So those are those things that you see in there, the purpose, why we need to coordinate and work together so we've got on the same
adoption cycle, same assumptions for cost, and then we also coordinate when we go after additional federal projects.
Thank you, Andrew. That's really helpful. Anybody else? Questions or further color commentary about JPEG? Okay. You have in your packet, it's on the inside of the first page, you have this draft schedule for the year. We are roughly on a quarterly schedule for JPEG. We've got this meeting today. And as you look ahead at the year, you'll see the dates of the meetings, and then also sort of three tracks for topic areas. So this is some stuff that the agencies have come up with, ideas for discussion points, but we are open to welcome any other thoughts or ideas that folks want to throw out for topics that this group should be talking about. You can do that now, and or you can do that later. If you have, like, we get through this meeting and then at the end you're like, you know, we should really spend some time talking about X, Y, or Z. Tell us at the end of this meeting, send us an email and let us know. But as you see here, we've got this meeting today, then we've got a meeting May 3rd. Our recommendation that we've talked about with all the staffs here is that the meeting in August be a tour. And our friends from Park City and Summit County have graciously offered to host us, because who doesn't want to go to Park City in the middle of August? To do a meeting and a tour there of some of the exciting things that are happening in Park City, including the nation's first all
fully electric bike share.
And
we also have a campus bus that's
okay, so we can look at some of those things, some road projects there, and do a little tour out in that area, and you know, maybe we'll make a day of it. Okay, so that's our plan for August, and then
the date may change.
Yes,
for the August email.
Okay.
Just for that.
Okay. Have we sent out calendar appointments for all these meetings?
We have.
Okay. If the date's going to change, it's going to happen soon.
Correct. I'll chat with Julia.
Oh. Okay. All right. So stay tuned on that. I think we'll try not to change the date, if we can avoid changing the date. Okay. Unless Andrea tells me, no, we need to change the date. Okay. So as you see, three tracks here, and our intention, you know, the first meeting today, you know, they're looking across the road. That's what we're talking about today. As you look ahead to May, August, and November, you can see various items. The first column, the Unified Plan and Transportation Planning, that is something that we are continuously doing. The plans are updated on a four-year cycle, and so we're constantly talking about what stage we're at in that process and bringing that information back to you so you can see the items there, including Wasatch Front Central Corridor update, Mountain update, financing strategies and assumptions, and then also legislative update and wrap-up, and then looking at what's going on federal issues. Like, for example, I imagine that in May it'll be a good time to talk about what is or is not happening on a federal infrastructure bill. And then other items down the right side, mountain transportation, air quality issues. But as of now, are there any topics that anybody wants to throw out? And let me say that we don't necessarily need to debate and decide. We can just sort of take feedback, either now and or later. But is there anything that's just on somebody's mind right now, like, it would be really great to talk about X subject at some point this year?
Performance measures.
Say again?
Performance measures.
Good. Let's talk about that today. Let's put that on the agenda. Okay. We'll keep looking at that as the year goes on. Okay? Anything else? Jerry?
Maybe at some point it'd be helpful to talk about coordinated human service transportation and all the things that are going on across the state in that area.
Okay. Good. Give us a short definition of what human services transportation is, please.
So this kind of got on the radar screen with the federal MAP 21 Act that issued an expectation that states, DOTs, transit agencies, work to coordinate the transportation activities of human service providers who do transportation as part of their service. So it could be senior, could be veterans, could be services for people with disabilities, all of whom provide transportation as part of what they do. We've been working with UDOT on this for several years, and we have great programs with Davis County and Weber County, and you know, started a dial ride, a new service in Utah County with the United Way. The idea there is you've got, I don't know what the number is, like 70 different funding streams that come from the federal government to do human service and education programs. They're all doing transportation, and it's not coordinated, so we stepped in to try to help with that, to try to share resources, coordinate. It has implications beyond our urbanized areas, and in some areas, this is the only lifeline transportation that's available to people. So I think it's just a topic that we should be more aware of and look for opportunities to create more synergies and better collaboration.
Okay, coordinated human services transportation.
Any other? All right. We will.
If assuming Senate Bill 136 passes, you know, by the time we get to May or August, there may be a lot of changes underway. Would be helpful to get some kind of briefing and update on where what's happening, when's it going to happen?
Yeah. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Thank you. All right. So again, the floor is open for you guys to come up with other topics you'd like to have discussed in this group, statewide audience, policy, finance, etc. If you have any recommendations later on today or subsequent to this meeting, please let us know. Andrea will be the keeper of that information. Okay, and we can send out updated schedules as is needed. Okay. Now, moving along on our agenda, we have three substantive topics for discussion today. Legislative update, unified plan update, and performance measurement approach. This meeting is scheduled to end at 1 o'clock, and we are going to strive to actually end at 1 o'clock. So I'm going to say, it's now 10 after noon. Let's try to spend about 20 minutes on legislative update, okay? And then save about 15 minutes for each of the others. Legislative update we can talk about for hours and hours. But I'll jump in and I'm going to talk about one particular bill that many of us have been following closely. That's Senate Bill 136. And then I'm going to open it up to others to talk about any other bills that they want to bring up. I'm thinking, perhaps Senate Bill 71 on the road tolls, any other items that folks want to bring up or ask about. Senate Bill 136 is the bill sponsored by Senator Harper and Representative Schultz that has emerged out of the months-long Transportation Governance and Funding Task Force. That bill is coincidentally being discussed right now in the Senate Majority Caucus meeting. So I'll describe to you what we believe is going to be in the updated version of that bill, with the significant caveat that it may be subject to change depending on what happens in the Senate Caucus today. A few key things. One, and many of you have heard this all many times before, so my intention is not to go into a lot of detail here, okay? Changing the UTA board to go from 16 part-time members appointed principally by local governments to 3 full-time members nominated by the counties in the UTA service area, appointed by the governor, and confirmed by the state senate, and the creation of a new 9-member advisory board appointed by the local government, cities and counties in the UTA service area. And the way you can characterize this is that the advisory body essentially functions kind of like a planning commission does for a city council, that projects and service plans would first be discussed by the advisory body, and that advisory body would make recommendations to the 3-member board. Also, within UDOT, the creation of a second deputy director function
One deputy director overseeing essentially capital investment and programming, and the other overseeing operations. Have I characterized that right, Shane and Carlos? Good enough? Okay.
You didn't do as good as Harper did, but.
Shane is referencing Senator Harper came to our WFRC legislative meeting this morning and gave an extended description of his of the bill, some of which is in the bill that was released now, 3 weeks ago, Senate 136 is introduced, some of which has not been released yet, and we're anticipating a long-awaited substitute to be coming out perhaps today. And he described some of that. The whole EPA board stuff and the UDOT stuff was in the bill as introduced a few weeks ago. Also, the bill would recognize what our unified plan recognizes, which is that with our population growth and our limited area to grow, particularly on the Wasatch Front, that we need to be able to continue to provide transportation choices to people. And so it would say we're going to make the funding that the state has available through its TIF, Transportation Investment Fund, more flexible so that it is eligible to be used on transit. And create a separate account within the TIF, and then any funds that were allocated into that account could be utilized for transit projects. And if there were any revenues that were specifically dedicated to transit, those could be deposited directly into that account. The bill would charge the Transportation Commission, and I'm going to cut over some of the details of this, would charge the Transportation Commission and UDOT and the MPOs and the cities and the counties and the transit agencies to work together to identify what are the goals and needs for the future and what are the ideal prioritization criteria for the allocation of those funds, significant resources to be invested in transportation capital projects. And rather than just looking at what you could consider traditional transportation metrics, which are important, like congestion and safety, it would add in things like land use and economic development, a broader consideration to help get at the overall purposes of the transportation system. So those are reforms to recognize the demands of our ever-changing region and state. Just one note, there had been a lot of talk over the summer about the possibility of the state preempting local land use authority. That message received, that is not in the bill. There's no preemption of local land use authority. There is perhaps coordination of infrastructure investment with local land use. Now, revenues. The original bill had an increase to the hotel tax and the car rental tax. Those things are coming out of the bill. What is now going to be in the bill, this is at least as Senator Harper presented this morning before the Senate caucus met to discuss it, are a few things. One, right now there are so-called four quarters of local option sales tax that are authorized. The bill would create an authorization for a so-called fifth quarter, another 0.25 local option sales tax. That fifth quarter could only be imposed if all the other four quarters were imposed, at least on the Wasatch Front. In the more rural areas, it may be that the fifth quarter could be imposed before the other four quarters are imposed. On the Wasatch Front, I think it's only on the Wasatch Front, if you take all those five quarters, which adds up to 1.30, don't ask, okay, there's a story here, but the total maximum local option sales tax is 1.30. Of that, 0.85% would have to be used for transit, and 0.45 could be used more flexibly for transportation purposes. Okay? Local options. I guess A few other minor points, they're all important. If these local options were not implemented by 2022, the option would go away. It would disappear. There was a previous discussion that the state would impose it, and then the money would go into the state coffers. As Senator Harper described it this morning, the state would not impose, just there would be a timeline, and then the authorization to do those unused quarters would go away. He also said that of the existing fourth quarter, the 0.1 of that fourth quarter could be imposed by the cities if the counties don't impose the full quarter. Right?
So what that is, there's a first right refusal. So if the counties don't enact it within a certain given period of time, a year or two, then the cities would have an option to enact the 0.10 portion of that quarter prior to the authority to enact it going away.
The quarters. The five quarters, which add up to 1.3 up. Okay?
There's eight options to get to five quarters.
And then you, on top of that, or in addition to that, the bill would also have an increase in the statewide sales tax, the state sales tax, of 0.15%. That would generate statewide about $80 million, and those funds would be deposited into this transit account of the TIF that I described before, and could be prioritized by the Transportation Commission in coordination with all the parties that we just talked about. The idea there is put some state resources into transit, have local resources available, and then have there be a collaboration between local and state, matching funds, coordination around operations and maintenance, long-term, et cetera. Okay, so who knows what happens with the revenue pieces? If anybody says they know exactly what's going to happen, they don't. So let's just see what comes out of the caucus today. The session ends in 2 weeks. Okay. As when the bill comes out, we'll distribute information about the bill along with a fact sheet about that. And I think there's going to be a lot of questions that need to be addressed. Just the only other things that I'll note on the bill, and then I want to open it up. Is the bill would continue to have an increase in the annual vehicle registration for alternative fuel vehicles, electric vehicles, and hybrids. That would be increased. The rationale there is that those vehicles do put wear and tear on the roads, but are not paying for the upkeep of the roads through the gas tax. Okay? So, comments about that or anything I've missed? We could talk about it for an hour or two, obviously, but we don't have enough time to do that. But Commissioner Scott.
Being on the task force, I think it's a great bill now. I mean, I had some concerns in the beginning, but I've been very appreciative of both Senator Harper and Representative Schultz and their willingness to listen and move on the fly and make some changes. And give us that added flexibility. And like was mentioned in the meeting this morning, it's probably the most comprehensive thing we've seen statewide for transportation in the last 30 or 40 years. And so it's a great step forward in my opinion.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Maybe to add to that, I agree totally. And as this comes out of caucus today, and then we'll go on to the Senate floor, and there may be some adjustments or tweaks. We're going to have to, if we support it, we're going to have to get the word out and get a heavy lift to get it through because it's huge. And it does do some things that some people aren't comfortable with, but they need to be done for the future planning for transportation. So, it comes out, let us know how you are on it, and then we'll send out the summary on it, any questions you have, and then we really do need a big lift from everybody to get this done.
If you want to.
I'd echo what you said. I apologize. I'm trying to do two things at once.
Also, having served on that task force, it's been a lot of work, you know. I don't even know if you could count the number of hours that you have put into this by everybody collectively, but particularly by the co-chairs. It's, you gotta hand it to them. It's amazing to me what has been accomplished. And it is, what I keep saying, it's a very transformational and pivotal time for the state of Utah and opportunity for us to really lead the nation and be forward thinking. And the devil's always in the details, but it's seeming to gel. There are some hurdles, and particularly I think when it comes to the funding aspect and the differences between processes and mode of operation between the two bodies, the Senate and the House. So it's not over yet.
Nope.
Keep at it and see what happens. So,
thanks, Commissioner. Mayor Skipsky, you served on the task force.
Yes, I did, and I would echo that it does sound like they have heard a lot of the concerns that were shared either by committee members or the community. I have spoken with Senator Harper about the electric vehicle fee not being reasonable. It may actually make it more difficult to get electric vehicles in the state. So they are looking at analyzing that fee so that it is structured appropriately for not only the state but the region. And that it matches the actual usage that is much more common with an electric vehicle, which can't just travel around the state like other vehicles because there's not a network of systems for charging yet. So we'll see what happens with that fee, but that's still the only thing that I'm really concerned about.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments about the bill?
I get on my soapbox for just a minute.
Sure.
The bill is currently updated today, or to be updated today, has a clause in there that shows that if a community doesn't implement all of the 4 or 5 quarter sales taxes before 2022, then the window closes for them to do that. If that remains the way it is, that basically drives a death nail in transit in Washington County. Because our constituent, our voters down there and our elected officials will not be ready by 2022 to implement transit to the same level that UTA has transit today. Our transit services are currently have none of the quarter cent sales taxes. But we need to allow that community down there to evolve into transit and to start with a 1 quarter. And then down the road, be able to have a second quarter or something of that nature. But if you put a sunset clause in there, you can't have all of you can't have any of the taxes. If you don't pass them by 2022, it will significantly impact our ability to have transit in the future.
I think, and the you brought this point up. The rationale behind that is the 2022 deadline is it's an encouragement. It is a legislative encouragement to move forward, and there's good and bad to that.
If we have an elected official or a body of elected officials who are against transit right now, but who may become more open to transit in 3 or 4 years from now, you're taking the opportunity.
Right. I would just note.
That's a good point on a growing community as well. It's what happens to communities who aren't ready for transit now, but will be growing as Utah's population grows. What happens in those communities?
Well, and then realistically, our population now is 165,000 in Washington County. We honestly expect a population of 300,000 within the next 15 years. At that point, we absolutely need to have transit. But the political atmosphere is right now.
So I think this is an important point. There will be other, you know, once the bill is out and we can look through all of the details and digest them, there will be other points
that some or all of us will want to register back with the sponsors. And so there's not a lot of time to do that, but there is time. So, you know, pay attention to this. We are, you know, the transportation agencies will be looking at this carefully and sharing feedback as well. So, okay. Let's just spend a few minutes on other transportation-related legislation. I think it would be great, Carlos or Shane, to spend a minute on Senate Bill 71, if you would, and then we can see what other topics folks want to talk about. So road tolls, President Niederhauser's road tolls bill.
I don't really been paying attention to this session. Yeah, that was that's an interesting bill. We had asked the president to run a bill that would allow us to modernize the way we're collecting tolls on express lanes and to also be able to use tolling as an alternative, to consider tolling as an alternative for the NEPA study that we're doing in Little Cottonwood Canyon. And he's passionate about Little Cottonwood Canyon. And is very interested in us looking at that. So we're moving forward with that NEPA study. Right now we're in scoping, so we're trying to identify what the problems are, what we're trying to solve, and working with the public and the agencies on that. So if the bill passes, that will be something that is considered as one of the alternatives as we move forward. We'll see what comes out of that process. We also envision being able to use the new technology to be able to, right now if you use our express lanes, the hot lanes that we have on I-15, you buy a transponder, and otherwise you're there as an HOV. So HOV in the state of Utah is defined as 2+. We have a 30% violation rate in those hot lanes right now. And about 25% of the users are actually express pass users. So we have more violators than we have users in the system. And so the technology now that's available will allow us to determine how many people are in the car and also to be able to charge people based on license plates. So they won't have to have transponders there. So we will be able to significantly decrease violations by helping them become customers. And what the bill allows is for if people do not pay their bills, then they will not be able to register their vehicle on the next cycle. They'll have to pay up their express lane pass before they can re-register their vehicle. One interesting amendment happened on the floor, the Senate floor. The president was good enough to call me into his office and ask, you know, how I would react to it. It's always an interesting question when the president asks you something like that. But it was, right now the department and the commission only have the authority to toll new capacity. And the amendment basically, what they feel is happening is, if you just go down and consider tolling a new road or a new lane that you're adding at a time, you get a haves and a have-nots. So you can't look at it as a system. And they wanted us to be able to look at it from a system perspective. So all of I-15 or I-15 and 215 and whatever. And so the amendment was, and blew me away, it passed unanimously on the Senate floor, because that's happened when it's a president's bill, right? That the department and the commission have the authority to toll existing capacity. So that's kind of a big deal. Now, from a federal law perspective, existing federal law, they're not allowed to toll interstates. They had 3 pilot projects on the MAP 21 that you can apply for. States had applied, but no one had actually implemented it. So those states, those pilots have been pulled back. They've reissued a call for states to apply. I think it closed the 20th. We put forward an application. I'm sure every state put a foot in the door. But the president's infrastructure proposal that came out last week basically is saying allow states to choose whether or not they want to toll interstates. So we'll see. This, so it's through the Senate, through the House committee. Sits on the House in House rules right now. We'll see that.
Thank you, Carlos. Any questions about that, or in just a few minutes, any other bills, transportation-related bills, anybody wants to talk about? Okay, let's move on to our next topic, which is an update on Utah's Unified Transportation Plan. We're going to have a relatively brief presentation from the dynamic duo, Ted Knowlton, Sean Singer, representing all of the transportation agencies in the state. Gentlemen, take it away, please.
Thank you, Andrew. Sean Singer with Mountainland. We're going to push through this really fast, right, Ted?
Yep.
So, I was thinking about Natalie Gottner's address at the Boston's Choice for 2050, and I'm going to play off of that a little bit. She said, how many people were living in Utah, in the audience here, before the Winter Olympic Games? And she hadn't raised their hands. Let's do that today. How many people were here before the Olympic Games? She pointed out that when we were preparing for the Olympics, as Carlos mentioned, we were doing the EIS for the front runner line and the IU team project. We had 2 million people living in the state of Utah. Since the Winter Olympic Games in Utah, we've added 1 million people. So we're at 3 million people now in the state of Utah. By the time we adopt our next long-range plan, or the Unified Plan, we'll be planning for 5 million people. We'll add 2 more million to our 3 million. As mentioned, Mr. Mayor Reese, Jenny Reese with Cedar Hills, before the meeting started, that I was in Phoenix, Arizona over the weekend having a great soccer weekend down there. And they have 5 million people living in Phoenix. Gorgeous freeways, incredible light rail system, amazing transit systems. I think that that's what we can envision for ourselves as we start to plan for the future. So, Ted, let's go through the next couple pieces. This is the Unified Plan book. This takes all of our plans and puts them together into one book. Let's go to the next slide. What that means is the cash MPO. Jeff, you want to raise your hand so we know who's here from cash? I think you have a county commissioner, thank you, council member. Cash is in here, WFRC members are in here. I know we've got a lot of WFRC members around the table. Thank you. MAG members of Janet, we've got a mayor here from Utah County. Dixie M. Gil Myron, and anyone else from Dixie area here with dispatch. Very good. And then UDOT staff, we've heard from Carlos, we have Shane and Nate and many others here from UDOT. UTA, we have, of course, Jerry. Thank you. Jerry, anyone else with UTA? Matt is here. Brett, again, is risen. Nicole, Laura, Dugan. I know I'm missing people. I don't mean to call this out, but I'm pointing out that this is a team effort to put this piece together. What this is all these plans coming together, as Andrew described at the very beginning of this discussion. We're in the process of updating this right now, and you'll be hearing from your staff about the update of your individual plan and how this gets rolled into the Unified Plan. Before this meeting started, we had all of your technical staff together in the room planning for that next edition. The next edition will be a 2050 edition. We'll add 10 more years of population improvement to the existing plan. Let's go to the next slide, Ted. Even Ida Guerrero's group with Federal Highway Steve Comprigi have recognized that this unified plan is a very unique approach that many states can never get to. Many states don't want to work together, or they are in competition with their MPOs or their other transportation agencies. This is a very unique process that we kind of call it our special sauce in Utah. That ability to collaborate and work together is very unique in Utah. Real briefly, getting into just a little bit of the financials, you'll see that we have about a $67 billion budget that funds all the projects in this plan. It's not a complete funding of all the needs, it's a prioritized list of needs. We've come down to what we actually need to a prioritized list. These first two pieces are roadway capacity and roadway maintenance. Then we have transit capacity and transit maintenance. We get our existing revenue that we have in place today, all the taxes that we have in place today for this plan equals about $60 billion. We're about $7 billion short. We need new taxes in place to fund that additional $7 billion. Go to the next slide. Tell you what that new revenue is made up of. We assume that there would be all auto-related sales tax to transportation. by 2019. That was actually accomplished, I think, in 2017. Or was it last year, Carlos?
No. It was from the bill in 2011 that ramped up to that.
That's great. So we actually have, we can check that one off.
We're actually sitting around 21%.
Yeah.
Is that right? 5 cent gas tax is a 15.25%. That's what we assumed when we made this piece. And I think we did a lot of work on that last year, Carlos, for the things that were 15 when we got flush. Thank you. So we did 5 cents and 15, and it has an ability to adjust. It has a ceiling and a floor. We have a registration piece. We haven't done anything with that yet. That's still something that we anticipate will happen. State funds are going to grow at 4% annually. I don't know what our actual growth rate is. Federal funds, we assumed, would grow at 1.5%. I think we're growing around 2%. I think it's a little bit higher than what we anticipated. We're very conservative in these projections, but I just wanted to point out that we have to go back one slide real briefly. This gap right here, this gray area, planned and new revenue, that's what we always are paying close attention to. That's what those sources are, go forward with. These make up that planned new revenue. How do we get to fulfill the financial constraint of that plan? So that's it.
Hey,
a brief overview. Yeah.
A real quick question.
Yeah.
On the federal side, I should know this because we participated in this, but let's assume for federal participation and on the capital side of the projects, is there a certain percentage that was assumed in this?
We did. We have very detailed assumptions. Jason Birmingham, he was here with us earlier. He's with Lucian Roberts in Birmingham. They're an independent municipal finance company. We hire them as our sub-consultant, and they have every line item detailed out, what the split is, how that is split, who, what counties are going to receive those monies based on past histories, future needs. Very detailed analysis. And Matt, I know I didn't probably answer your question directly. I don't know exactly what this split is, but yes, we do.
Yes, okay.
You want to take over from that spot?
Yeah, you got it.
Thanks, John.
So let me tell you, I'm Ted Bolton, I'm the Deputy Director of Wasatch Front Regional Council. I've been with WFRC for 5 years, and I want to tell you that being in the transportation planning world in Utah is ridiculously fun. And the reason is that it is super fun to have the opportunity to collaborate and to work with interesting people in across all these agencies and roll up our sleeves and basically ask the question, how can we do a better job in everything that we do? Coordinate better boundaries, develop assumptions that make sense for each of us. And I wanted to just give you a little picture of what happens. So we get together in a coordinating committee and we talk about the things we've heard in JPEG and from our boards, and we coordinate what's happening in these smaller subcommittees that are tackling key areas that come together in the development of the unified plan. So this, each of these boxes, there would be perhaps one staff person from each agency looking at performance measures, which you're going to hear a little bit more about from Julie and Nate. Finance, which Sean is the lead in their GIS with Chris Chestnut, Chris Reeder.
He left.
Active Transportation is a committee, and part of the reason it's a committee right now is that that's an area of focus. We're trying to ask the question, how does a unified transportation plan, really, what's the form it should take for active transportation? And it's an area where there's been some development in the Safety Committee and the Communications Committee. So we meet on a periodic basis, coordinating the work. This doesn't replace the direction that we get from within each of our organizations. I'll talk a touch about the performance measures piece, trying to not take thunder away from what we're about to hear. But it's an interesting dance because we each, as each of our organizations, we have idiosyncrasies and unique needs to respond to the elected officials in our region, right? So with Wasatch Front Regional Council, our council adopted a set of goals and we have built them into different performance measures, essentially ways to ask the question, what kinds of projects do we need and when? And likewise, Mountain Land does that, and UDOT does that for
But we decided that we're going to figure out, is there a core set of measures, things that, objectives that we're all trying to accomplish with transportation that we're going to work on together. And these are the ones that we're working on: safety, economic vitality, state of good repair, making sure things are well maintained, air quality in the environment, mobility and accessibility. And so you saw it in the in the JPAC agreement itself, that it calls out that let's start developing and utilizing shared criteria to inform our transportation planning. And this is where that is happening. It's an area of focus within the Unified Plan. Almost done. Wanted to give you a sense. Sean talked about it's a 2019 timeframe to conclude this, that every agency is a little different, but roughly what's happening in 2018 is we're all developing the suite of transportation projects that will then become that the components of the overall plan. And then as we look forward into 2019 and the later part of 2018, we're finalizing our financial assumptions and we're starting to prioritize or phase the transportation projects. So that's generally what's happening within the Unified Plan process. I'll leave you two parting shots, and then we'd like to open it up for a few minutes of questions if we have time. Parting shot one is that in this iteration of the Unified Plan, again, active transportation is a focus area, performance measures are a focus area, and we're starting to look more and more at emerging topics like connected and autonomous vehicles and other things. So I wanted to give you a sense of some of the new things. We're certainly also going to take advantage and figure out how do we incorporate new things that come out of the legislative session. That's takeaway one. And takeaway two, doing the Unified Transportation Plan, it makes us better as a transportation planning profession. I just want to reiterate that we all know that plans get better from this process of engaging in collaboration. It also, of course, helps us sing with one voice in unison, but it does actually make our plans better. So with that, I'll let you know that the presentation is done and turn it back to you, Mr. Chair, if you want to yes.
Thank you. Thanks, guys, very much. Are there any comments or questions? I mean, we've got WRC and MAG here, but, you know, any of the other agencies that are involved, or just any of our elected officials here, comments or questions about the Unified Plan process? Okay. Nice job, guys. Thank you very much. So that process will continue, as they said. 2019 is the time frame for the adoption of Utah's next Unified Transportation Plan. It will go 2019 to 2050. And we'll keep bringing information back about that to this group and getting additional feedback. Okay. Now, Ted and Sean already talked about performance measurement. So we're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive into that topic. And we have Nathan and Amber here who've been working on this across the state for UDOT. But each of the transportation agencies have leads on performance measurement. Because what Ted went over is a very high-level look at some key goals. There's a lot of details. And I would just say, before turning this over to Nathan, that why do we manage performance? Why do we take a performance management approach? Well, it's really about making sure that we have goals for our transportation system, and then we can evaluate the decisions we're making, scenarios and investments, to make sure that we are getting the maximum value out of them. So we're identifying goals and then measuring the performance of the system against those goals. It's the right way to do business. It helps us make good decisions and be able to demonstrate to policymakers and to the general public the results of their investments and help them also make choices. So there are federal requirements to do this work and do them in a coordinated way, and our federal partners have been extremely helpful to us in working through this. But I would just say the last thing, Nathan, we don't do this because the federal government tells us we have to do that. I say that respectfully. We do this because it's the right way to make decisions about investment of resources and have a transportation system that serves our region and state and our goals. But we are very happy to be working with our federal partners in putting this structure together. So, without further ado, Nathan.
Thank you, Andrew. Much to the item that Andrew addressed, performance measures are nothing new for Utah. We've been doing them a long time. As Ted and Sean just showed you, it's something that's part of a unified plan today. One of the things that UDOT has been a proponent for with many other states as our federal partners is trying to get performance measures to drive the decisions about how we spend the money rather than having money allocated in small little silos of funds. My boss, Carlos, has been working on that his whole career. And again, there's been significant change in the last bill, as I and Federal Highways can tell you, or our Region 8 MDA partners, regarding how their funds work. Just for instance, in pavement for highways, for UDOT, there was a fund that associated with interstates, and then a fund for National Highway, and then a fund for traffic over a certain rate on what we call the SBT road. They just it worked its way down and down and down, and you could only spend money on those funds and make it really, really hard. So we've been asking the states for a long time to let us show you by performance that we're meeting certain criteria and then spend the money the way we need to spend it. Across the country, there's varied takes on how that works, but the federal agencies have finally gotten it. And so with the FAST Act, the first bill that's there, they've implemented a requirement to meet certain standards, but they've also started putting the money in a bigger bucket and letting you kick it out. And there's some penalties or that come associated with that where they'll control that certain obligations are met if you don't manage the money in such a way that they think meets basic requirements. That has been imposed on every DOT, every major transit agency, and every MPO. That's who's affected within the state. Because of that, it also affects rural transit, which means every single city, every single county throughout our state are all affected by these measures, and that's why we brought them here, so everybody's understanding and aware of what they are. What we're hoping that will happen is that there's lots of agreements in how you spend the money, and we've decided, just like the Joint Policy Advisory Committee that you make up, we want to be unified in Utah between our MPOs, our transit, and our DOT about a single agreement. The types of performance measures we use would be standardized and consistent. But every small local MPO, council, rural council, etc., that exists that has any implication for getting funds from the federal government has to agree to those measures. And so that there's an agreement that's going to take place to make all that happen, and we'll show you a little bit today about what's in that agreement. So all we have a sheet that looks like this, except for it probably doesn't have writing on it. Okay? This sheet is supposed to help you summarize in simple terms what's there. On the left-hand side, there's seven categories. Today I'm going to show you nine because there's two FTA for the transit side. There's seven for the highway side. Those categories are the performance measures out of the FAST Act that are required to be met by the state. Within those seven categories that are there, there's different groups of the MPOs and the rural UDOT that they all apply to. And if there's an X in there, it means it applies to that group. So, for instance, if you look down second from the bottom for freight reliability and you see the cash MPO, it says they're not required to meet that performance measure. Anybody know why? Because the Fed's freight requirement only applied to interstates and cash MPO has no interstate. Okay, so
never heard that.
You get the idea how it works, they like to tear everybody back. You're going to get paid out for it from my good friend who's sitting over here, just like reminding everybody about his lack of interstate. It's a big deal. I've been in Cache Valley, I know how they look at it. But in terms of how this works, you can see how that might apply to you. What's over there in the threshold column? That threshold column just gives you some information about how the Fed set up the measures and what the measures apply to and then the penalty. So let me tell you a little bit about penalties. First of all, it's safety. Safety had to be turned in by the DOT in August.
The other six measures have to be turned in by the DOT and by the Transit Authority in May. The MPOs have to all adopt measures that us and the Transit Authority turn in or modify and make their own 6 months after those dates. So the MPOs right now are facing a deadline to accept or adopt the safety ones. Okay, that's there, it exists right now, and they're working on that. The May deadline is for the other six for the DOT and transit, and then in 6 months.
Mark was wondering what his deadline is for accepting the safety rules.
It's end of February.
Very much.
Yeah, because
next Wednesday.
And there's a request in, Myron, Ivan, maybe you can talk to us. There's a request that's been sent in to Steve, I think, from some of the MPOs just regarding the timing on those, about getting their boards to approve and accept those. That I can't remember, Steve, but they're asking for another month or so to do that, Julie.
I think in most cases they are going to support state goals, and knowing that, having emailed that effect, I think getting the paperwork done, I think,
okay, perfect. So we'll show you a little bit how that works. I'll show you what the penalty is over there on the right. You'll notice it says in the penalty on the right for safety, it says if you don't meet it, you have to apply all of the HSIP, which is the Highway Safety Improvement Program. You have to apply all the funds that used to be allocated to that program specifically, that to highway safety improvements. In the state of Utah, we still do that. We didn't change that. We could. It is saying you can move money and do other things with it, but our state, we still are keeping all that money going towards safety. It's part of our goals for zero fatalities and some of the things that are there. The next two you'll see in pavements, something we do a lot of. If you don't meet the goals in pavements, then again, there was used to be a set amount of money in different categories for interstates and for the national highway system, etc. You have to make sure that that amount of money gets spent on them. So if you took money off your interstates and put it on local roads that were eligible for the funds now, but your interstates don't meet the criteria that's there, this would force you to have to spend more money back on the interstate than you've got. So you kind of see how they work, right? It happens to so be in Utah right now, that both for safety and for bridge, we still program at or above those 2009 levels. So in the grand scheme of things, before everybody gets worried about what performance measures mean, Utah's spending their money in a way that none of the penalties would require us to spend it differently. We're still spending it on those things that are most important because the performance measures we've had previously still apply and make that work.
Well, I said, Nathan, I think it's easier for us because we have so much state money. States that don't have state money are squeezed in having to spend this money in other ways. So we're in a unique position.
Very, very true. The federal money for us as a DOT makes about a third of our program. And let's see, where did our partners go? How much does it make a year's map?
About 20%.
Okay, so you get an idea of where we're at, very unique in that regard. Allows us to keep doing that. So we want to show you where all the measures are. If you go to UDOT's homepage and you scroll down in the middle, there's a thing that says strategic direction and performance measures. If you click on that box and open it, it goes into our strategic direction and it rolls down just the way it rolls up. Except for two fingers. Sorry, she doesn't use a map. So if you go up here, you can find one that says federal performance measures, okay, within that box.
Nathan, you should get them to the orientation with all the information that's available.
We had another hour, but I got 5 minutes. So within that box, you're going to find these seven measures plus the two FTA measures all here in boxes. I'll pick one and open it for you. We'll open the safety one. Within the safety measure, this defines the metrics that the feds outline. Fatalities, injuries, etc. On the next area is what our goals are. Okay, so those are the targets that you have to hit. What all of you might find interesting is next to the targets you have to hit is the percent of those that happen to fall within your area by boundary. So for instance, of the 271 statewide fatalities that are there, 2% of those occurred in the Cache MPO area. Okay?
and 40% occurred in the WFRC area, 45% in the rural area outside the MPOs. So there's some information there to help everybody orient where they are, what the goals are. There's information down below there then that defines how they work. Here's the exact data for every one of these. So on the left, you can see whether it's cash, AC, MAG. They all work. You can click on your line, show you what your current fatality is, what some of the rates are, etc. There's a box for every one of these that has what all the current measures are, that we are planning as the DOT to turn in by those dates of May, and they already turned the safety one in. Okay? All the requirement is for everyone to work together is just making sure that those measures work for each group, or that they may be assessed a penalty if they don't. You'll notice there's a bunch of categories that said no penalty on this front sheet. The reason there's probably no penalty there, I didn't direct me to feel differently about this, but they're new measures that we're trying to track things in a way that's different than we have in the past. And so the federal government's not sure what standard needs to be applied, but they want to start collecting data in terms of things like congestion reduction and reliability so that we can start to establish criteria that works well for us. Some of these measures are things that we as a DOT didn't have the capability or measures to do in the past, but new methods of data collection are allowing those to happen. So there's certain measures in there like reliability that may not meet the May 20th deadline because the information and data moving back and forth will be difficult as well. So in terms, all the MPOs have been asked to set agreement with the DOT and with the transit agencies to make a unified plan for what measures work and the measures control how the money can be allocated from our federal partners. It's all available at that location for people to start browsing and seeing what's there. Part of our interaction, our collaboration, is making everything available. And the data sources mostly are being managed by the DOT or by the transit agency for all the MPOs to get access to the data. Any questions? Thank you.
Andrew?
Yeah, next.
No, go ahead. You were
going to. I was just going to ask if Julie had anything to add. Do you want to?
No, I
didn't hear anything about
Andrew.
Okay. Say what? I'm sorry?
You don't have anything else.
Okay, thank you. Amber, did you have anything else? Okay. Megan?
It just reminded me, I know everybody works here with the feds and Ivan, but I don't think they really realize the permeability of how we deal with the federal government, especially on the roads and how it impacts everybody. I think that might be a good thing to bring up at another meeting, not to ask you to do a big presentation on it, but to just go through about really how you do the NEPA, how you do this, how you do that, and how it works, because I actually come from another state, and it's not as simple as I it might be different, especially for, I mean, it's in the nicest way, being elected officials.
Andrew, if I could add, and we were just talking about it this morning, we were recognizing how good we have it here as federal officials, because you do include us in just about everything you do. We're always invited to participate, and hopefully we're contributing to the process. Where other states we've worked in, it's not like that. And I think those other states are making a mistake, because in the end, they're losing them. They're missing out on somebody that can help them, guide them through whatever it is, these red tape that we all deal with. So
it's a great partnership, and maybe your part of your point is that we might sometimes take it for granted or not even realize the role that our federal partners have. So I think that's a great idea for a topic to spend a little time on in the future.
I just think it's helpful to know, especially when you're first going down the road. What an EIS is, what it entails, how it dovetails.
Okay.
I mean, I've been doing this for 12 years and I still don't know what. But they're very helpful.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other items anybody wants to bring up?
including any requests, now that we've been thinking about it more, like Meg obviously is, for other topics you might want to talk about at our JPAC quarterly meetings. Okay. That brings us to the end of our meeting. I have a motion to adjourn.
I so moved.
Okay. We stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody, very much.